just didn't make sense. Except the lobby has a ton of cameras, but from his elevator to the exit in the basement, there was only the one. Made sense. Did he ever talk to you? The guy in the tower? Yes, not once. He'd go just past me like clockwork every Wednesday night. Or, well, it was 4 a.m., so maybe that was Thursday morning. Still dark out, though. He shakes his head. Doesn't matter, whatever. He'd walk past me. For years, this would happen. I would nod and say, "Good evening, sir." I'm polite like that. He's one of my tenants. I treat him with respect, no matter how he treats me. Most tenants, well, they're great. They call me by my first name, tell me to do the same with them, but I don't. I like to show respect. You know what I'm saying? I've been here 18 years, and I would say I still haven't met half of the people who live here. They're in bed by midnight when I come on. But the tower guy? I'd nod to him every time. I would say, "Good evening, sir." He just kept his head down, never said anything, never looked up, never acknowledged I even existed. I say nothing. Look, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. I know he's dead and all, so I shouldn't speak bad about the man. I think he had issues, you know? Glenda, my wife, she watches some show on hoarders and whatnot. It's a real illness, Glenda tells me, so maybe that was it. It's not like I'm happy he's dead or anything. You said every Wednesday night. Huh? You said he walked past you every Wednesday night. Or Thursday morning. It's weird having a midnight gig, like tonight. I arrived Wednesday night, but what time is it now? I check my watch. Almost 1:30. Right, so it's not Wednesday night anymore. It's Thursday morning. Let's call it Thursday morning, I say, because this subject is irrelevant and boring me. Yeah, okay. You said you saw him walk past you every Thursday morning at 4 a.m. Yep, that's right. So it was a routine. Yeah. How long had he been doing this? Oh, years and years. Summer, fall, spring, winter? Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, there were times he missed, I'm sure of it. There were months I wouldn't see him at all. Like maybe he flew to Florida for the winter, I don't know. And there were nights, well, the job is quiet. I sit, I may stick in my AirPods and stream something on Netflix, you know what I'm saying? But as soon as someone touches the door, bam, I'm up. We lock it after midnight, so maybe sometimes he walked by and I didn't see. Did you ever see him leave at other times? No, I don't think so. Always 4 a.m. or right around then. I think about that. And what time did he come back? He didn't stay out long. I think he just took a walk. He was back within an hour, maybe sometimes more. I don't think it was consistent. Look, I figure he's a weirdo, wants to be alone, so he takes night walks. I've heard of stranger things, right? When he walked past you heading out, I continue, what direction was he going? East. I glance down across the street in the direction where he's pointing. Into the park? Yep. Every time. I figured he was taking a walk, like I said. Strange time, and I know the park is a lot safer now than it used to be, but you wouldn't see me strolling around in there at 4 in the morning. I think about this. 4 a.m. I wonder whether that is a clue. I think it is. When was the last time you saw him going out like that? I ask. Recently, last week maybe, or the week before. I realize that would have been the day before he was murdered. Rye Strauss goes out for his usual Thursday morning 4 a.m. walk. On Friday, he goes out again, for the first time in forever during the daytime, and comes back with, in all likelihood, his killer. I have a plan. I stand in the shadows across the street from Malachy's. The time is 4 a.m. By law, New York City bars must stop serving alcohol at 4 a.m. Coincidence? I, for one, hope not. They say New York is the city that never sleeps. That may be true, but right about now, her eyes are blinking closed and her head is nodding in exhaustion. My lizard brain, that survival instinct, is wary of shutting itself down. It prefers preparedness. Even as I move about my day, the lizard brain seeks out potential, or erroneously perceived, enemies and threats. I stay hidden and watch Malachi's door. I have changed into jogging attire and a sweatshirt with a hood. No, it's not a hoodie. It's a sweatshirt with a hood. I would never wear a hoodie. I am patient. I wear earphones. I'm listening to a playlist Kabir created for me, featuring Meek Mill, Big Sean, and 21 Savage. Somewhere in the past year or two, after initially scoffing at what I could not comprehend, I've come to love what we call rap or hip-hop. I know that this music, like Malachi's Pub, was not created for me, but the underlying anger appeals. I also enjoy the humanism in the desperate posturing and bravado. They want to appear tough, but their neediness and insecurity shine through so brightly, I assume they must know that we are in on the joke. Right now, as Kathleen and a male bartender lock up for the night, Meek Mill is bemoaning the fact that he can't trust women because he has issues. I hear you, my troubled friend. Kathleen waves goodbye to the bartender. He heads west toward Broadway, probably to the one train. Kathleen crosses Columbus Avenue and continues to walk with purpose east on 72nd Street. She lives, I know from Kabir's research, on 68th near West End Avenue. In short, she is not going home. I follow from across the street. 2 minutes later, she walks past the Dakota and crosses into Central Park. At this hour, the park is pretty much abandoned. I see no one else. Trailing her will be difficult. We all possess lizard brains, don't we? And in a situation where you are a woman alone in a park, and a man in a hooded sweatshirt, however tasteful that hooded sweatshirt may be, is following you, you take notice. When she heads north on the sidewalk running along what is simply called the lake, I take a parallel path west of her that goes through the brush. This path is dark and in some ways not the safest at night, but one, I am always armed, and two, if you are any sort of experienced mugger, you wouldn't set to pounce in an area so remote that you'd have to wait days, weeks, or months for a profitable target to happen by, would you? I lose sight of Kathleen for seconds at a time, but so far this appears to be working. She's making her way north toward the entrance to the wildlife thicket known as the Ramble, on the north shore of the lake. The Ramble is a nearly 40-acre protected natural reserve with winding paths and old bridges and a tremendous variety of topography and fauna and the like. There is birdwatching, yes, but in a less enlightened day, the Ramble was best known for hosting homosexual encounters. It was a spot where gay men would cruise, as we used to say. It was supposedly the safest place to avoid being assaulted by those who meant them harm, which is to say, of course, it hadn't been very safe at all. Kathleen stops on the bridge that crosses over the lake and into the heart of the Ramble. The moon glistens off the water, and I can see her silhouette. A minute passes. She doesn't move. There is no reason to pretend anymore. I come down the path. Kathleen hears my approach and turns expectantly. "Sorry to disappoint you," I say when she sees me. Kathleen jolts back a little.
"Wait, I know you."
I don't reply.
"What the hell, are you following me?"
"Yes."
"What do you want?"
"Rye Strauss won't be coming tonight."
"Huh? Who?"
But I can see the fear in her eyes.
"I don't know what you're talking about."
I move closer so she can see my disappointed frown. "You can do better than that."
"What do you want?"
"I need your help."
"With what?"
"Rye was murdered." I just say it like that, too matter-of-factly. Breaking bad news is not my forte.
"He was..."
"Murdered, yes." Tears push into her eyes. Kathleen makes a fist and places the back of it against her mouth to stifle a cry. I wait, give her a moment or two. She puts the fist down and blinks into the moonlight.
"Did you kill him?"
she asks me. "No,
Are you going to kill me?
If that were my plan, you'd be dead by now. That doesn't seem to comfort her much.
What do you want with me?
I need your help, I repeat.
With what?
With trying to catch his killer. Chapter 13. Kathleen doesn't say a word as we head back down Central Park toward 72nd Street and my abode. The gate over the arch entrance of the Dakota is locked for the night. I ring the bell. Tom comes out and unlocks it for me. He's used to seeing me bring women back here at all hours, though not as many in recent years, but I think Kathleen's advanced age surprises him. We head through a courtyard with two fountains and take the elevator up to my apartment overlooking the park. Some people are intimidated by this place. She is not one of them. She used the walk over here to regain her bearings. She moves straight toward the window and looks out. Kathleen moves with confidence, head high, eyes dry. Her clothes are wrinkled from a long night. The blouse is still working barmaid one button too low at the neckline. I bought this apartment fully furnished from a famed composer who lived here for 30 years. You may already be conjuring up the layout in your mind's eyes. Dark cherry wood, high ceilings, inlaid woodwork, antique armoires, crystal chandeliers, oversized fireplace with brass tools, ornate silk oriental carpets, red-maroon velvet chairs. If so, you are correct. Myron describes my abode as Versailles Redux, which is both spot-on in terms of impression and technically incorrect in every way, since I own nothing from that particular geography or era. I pour Kathleen a cognac and hand it to her.
How did you know? She asks.
I assume that she is talking about her weekly meetings in the park with Rye Strauss. I hadn't known for certain, of course. I just followed my intuition. For one, you have a police record for 12 arrests, all for civil disobedience at various progressive rallies.
That's it?
That's for one.
And for two?
You told me that you started working at Malachy's in 1978. Frankie Boy told me you were a part-timer as early as 1973.
Frankie Boy has a big mouth.
She takes a deep sip.
Is Rye really dead?
Yes.
I loved him, you know? I loved him for a very long time.
I had figured this. Kathleen hadn't rescued Lake Davies, or if she had, only inadvertently. Her real goal in facilitating Lake's surrender was simpler. Remove the competition for Rye Strauss's affection.
Who killed him? She asks.
I was hoping that perhaps you could help me with that.
I don't see how, she says. Do the police have any suspects?
Not a one. Kathleen takes a deep sip and turns back to the window.
Poor, tormented soul. All of them, really. The Jane Street Six. They never meant to hurt anyone that night.
So I keep hearing.
Idealistic kids. We all were. We wanted to change the world for the better.
I want to get off this overly worn excuse justification track and back on one more fertile to my investigation. Did you know where Rye was living this whole time?
Yeah, of course. At the Beresford.
She turns to me.
Have you seen old pictures of him? I mean, when Rye was young? God, he was so beautiful. Such charisma. Sexy as all get out.
I could see her smile in the window's reflection.
I knew he was damaged. I could see that right away, but I've always been a sucker for the dangerous type.
Who else knew Rye lived at the Beresford?
No one.
You're sure?
Positive.
Did you ever visit him?
At the Beresford? Never. He'd never allow a guest. I know that sounds odd. Well, Rye was odd. Became odder by the day. A hermit, really. He never let anyone else in. He was too scared.
Scared of what?
Who knew? He had an illness.
Then, thinking on it for a moment, she adds,
Or so I thought. But maybe, I don't know now. Maybe he was right to be scared.
How did Rye end up there?
In that tower, you mean?
I nod.
After Lake surrendered, Rye and I, we got together. He moved in with me. I had a place on Amsterdam near 79th, a walk-up above a Chinese restaurant. Then it became a mattress store, then a shoe store, then a nail salon. Now it's Asian Fusion, which sounds like a fancy name for a Chinese restaurant to me. Everything that goes around comes around, am I right?
As rain.
What does that mean anyway? Why would someone describe rain as being right?
I sigh. Anyway.
Anyway, I shared a floor with one of those massage parlors. Not what you're thinking. They were legit. Cheap, no frills, but legit. At least I think they were legit, but who knows. All that happy ending stuff, who cares? I'm just babbling. Sorry.
I try to sound kind, as I say, it's okay, so as to encourage her to keep talking.
We were happy, Rye and me. I mean, sort of. Like I said, I knew what I was getting in for. It wasn't going to be forever, but I'm not big on forever. My relationships with men are like a wild buckaroo ride at a rodeo. It's exciting and crazy, and I know it's going to be me who gets thrown off in the end and breaks a rib when I smack the ground. I like her.
Kathleen turns now and gives me a well-crafted, oft-used side smile that lands.
That ride lasted longer than I would have thought.
How long?
As a couple? On and off for years. As a friend, well, right up until today.
I'm sorry.
I bet the Staunch family found him.
Nero Staunch?
The family always wanted revenge, you know. One of the people who died that night was a niece or something. Rye always figured they got to the others.
The Staunches?
Yeah.
Rye thought that the Staunches killed the other Jane Street Six members?
Something like that, yeah. The Staunch girl who got killed? I think her brother runs the family business now.
She shrugs.
Rye got nuttier and more paranoid as time passed. He was erratic at best. Sometimes, for no reason, he'd start thinking the cops or Staunch was closing in on him. Maybe because he heard a funny noise or someone gave him a weird look. Maybe because Mercury was in retrograde. Who knew? So Rye would run off for a while. Sometimes he'd be gone for months. Then he'd just show up one day and want to live with me again. He'd do that, come back and stay with me, until he got the place in the Beresford.
When was that?
What year? Oh, let me think. Mid-90s, maybe?
That would be around when the paintings were stolen. You set up a weekly meet, I ask?
Yeah. Whatever was wrong with Rye, it was getting worse. You take all his issues, which are really an illness, you know, like cancer or heart diseases. Incurable, maybe, I don't know. But you take all that, and you take his paranoia, and then you add in the fact that he really did have people after him, the FBI, the Staunches, whatever. Then pile on the guilt from that horrible night, and kaboom, like with the Molotov cocktails. So by the time Rye moved into that tower, he couldn't handle life anymore. He shut out the world.
Except you.
Except me.
The R-rated smile again.
But I'm pretty special.
I'm sure you are. Are we flirting? I move on. When you two met for your weekly rendezvous in the park, what did you do?
Talked, mostly.
About?
Anything. It didn't make much sense in recent years.
But you still met.
Sure.
And you talked.
I also gave him the occasional hand job.
Nice of you.
He wanted more.
Who doesn't?
Right? And I'd try, for old time's sake. Like I said, he used to be so damn beautiful. Like you, but I don't know. By 2000, maybe 2001, he lost his physical appeal, to me at least.
Kathleen arched an eyebrow.
Still, a hand job isn't nothing. Truer words, I agree. Kathleen stares me down a bit. I like that. I am, I confess, tempted. She may be on the older side, but she's got that innate sexual allure you can't teach. And I did lose out earlier tonight. Kathleen saunters now toward the crystal decanter and gestures whether it would be okay to pour herself another. I do the honors. To rye, she says. To rye. We clink glasses. He was also afraid people would steal his stuff.
What stuff?
I don't know. Whatever junk he had in his apartment.
Did he ever tell you about his junk?
Huh? As in, what he had in his apartment?
No. Did you read about the recovered stolen Vermeer?
Her eyes are emeralds with yellow specks. She looks at me over the amber liquor in her glass.
Are you saying?
In his bedroom.
Holy shit!
She shakes her head.
That explains a lot.
Like?
Like how he got the money for the apartment. There were other paintings stolen, right?
Yes.
From some place in Philadelphia?
Right nearby.
Rye visited Philly a lot. When he'd run away. Had friends there, I guess. A girlfriend, maybe. So, yeah. Rye could have done it, sure. Maybe he fenced a painting or two, and that's how he got all that money.
It made sense. Did you notice any changes in him recently? I ask.
Not really, no.
Then, thinking more about it, she says,
but, well, come to think of it, yeah, but I don't think it has anything to do with this.
Try me.
His bank got robbed. Or at least, that's what Rye told me. He was freaking out about it. I told him not to worry. Banks have to make you whole if they got robbed, I said.
That's true, right? Pretty much.
But he wouldn't calm down.
I consider this. Was he imagining it, or...
No. It was in the Post. Bank of Manhattan on 74th. He even told me, last time I saw him, come to think of it, that the bank had left a message.
On his phone?
Dunno, come to think of it.
Did he own a phone?
Just a burner I bought for him at Duane Reade. It lets you keep the same number for years. I don't know the details.
No phone, I knew, had been found at the murder scene. Interesting.
He never kept it on, she continues. He was afraid someone could track him. He'd, like, check for messages once or twice a week.
And the bank left him a message?
I guess. Or at the front desk, whatever. They wanted him to come down to the branch or something.
Did he?
I don't know.
I consider this. Rye Strauss left the Beresford during the day on Friday. Less than an hour later, he came back with someone.
Back to his apartment? With a guest?
A small, bald man. They came through the basement.
It had to be with the killer.
She shakes her head.
Poor Rye. I'm gonna miss him.
Kathleen throws back the rest of the drink and moves closer to me. Very close. I don't back up. Her hand rests on my chest. Her blouse is too tight. She looks up at me with the emerald eyes. Then her hand slides slowly down my body, and she cups my balls.
I don't think I want to be alone tonight,
she whispers, giving me just the perfect little squeeze. And so she stays. Chapter 14. I sleep, though sleep may be the wrong word choice on this particular night, in an antique, baroque, four-poster canopy bed made of carved mahogany and an embroidered lace topper. The bed is a bit much, I confess, dominating the room in every way, the four posts nearly scraping the ceiling, but it still sets the mood. At sunrise, Kathleen kisses my cheek and whispers,
"Find the bastard who killed him."
I have no desire to avenge Rye Strauss, especially since it appears likely that he did one or more of the following in time sequence: stole my family's art, murdered my uncle, abducted and assaulted my cousin. Which begs the question, what exactly am I after here?
I rise and shower. The copter awaits. When it touches down in Lockwood, my father is waiting for me. He is decked out in a blue blazer, khaki trousers, tasseled loafers, and a red ascot. He wears this outfit nearly every day with very few variations. His thinning hair is slicked back against his skull. He stands with his hands behind his back, shoulders pulled up. I see me in 30 years' time, and I don't really like that. We greet with a firm handshake and awkward embrace. My father has piercing blue eyes that seem somehow all-knowing, even now, even when the mind has grown cloudy and erratic.
It's good to see you, son.
And you, I say. We share a name, Windsor Horn Lockwood. He's the second, I'm the third. He is called Windsor. I, like my beloved grandfather, am Wynne. I have no son, just a biological daughter, so unless I, to quote my father, up my game, the Windsor Horn Lockwood name will end at 3. I don't really see this as any great tragedy. We start back toward the main estate.
I understand the Vermeer has been found, my father says.
Yes.
Will any of this reflect poorly on the family?
This may seem like an odd opening question, but I'm not surprised by it. I can't see how.
Marvelous. Have you seen the Vermeer for yourself?
I have.
And it's undamaged?
Off my nod, he continues.
This is grand news. Simply grand.
No sign of the Picasso. No.
Oh, that's too bad.
The barn is up ahead on the left. My father doesn't so much as glance at it. You may be wondering why I keep making a big deal of the barn, so I will tell you plainly. I shouldn't. I was wrong. I blamed my mother, and that was a mistake on my own part. I see that now. To be fair, I was only 8 years old. How to explain this and not seem crass? When I was 8 years old, not long after Granddad's funeral, my father and I strolled unsuspectingly into that barn. It was a setup. I know that now. I didn't then, but I did know a lot of things then. Cutting to the chase, we walked in on my mother naked on all fours, with another man mounting her from behind, just like the horses. I can see you nodding knowingly. This incident illuminates so much, you think with a tisk. It explains why I can't get close to a woman, why I only see them in terms of sex, why I am afraid of being hurt. Oddly enough, what I see mostly when I remember that day is not my mother on her hands and knees, her lover's hand pulling her hair, her eyes rolling back. No, what I remember most clearly is my father's ashen face, his mouth slightly agape, almost as it is now from the stroke, his eyes shattered, staring out at nothing. As I said, I was 8 years old. I never forgave my mother. That angers me. I know that my behavior was understandable, but many years later, when I watched my mother die in her sickbed, I realized what a stupid waste it had all been. The cliché applies here. Life is indeed short. I think about what she lost and what I lost, how simple forgiveness could have enhanced her short life and mine. Why couldn't I see that then? I have lived a life of few regrets. This, how I treated my own mother, is my greatest. I never considered the fact that perhaps my mother had her reasons, or perhaps she didn't know better, or perhaps she made, as we all do, a terrible, tragic mistake. My mother was so young, only 19 when she got pregnant and married my father. Perhaps she had wants that she couldn't express. Perhaps, like her oldest son, monogamy was not for her. Perhaps my father, who ended up getting married twice more, and the trappings of Lockwood Manor were stifling, suffocating, making it impossible for her to breathe. Perhaps my mother didn't want to break up a family or hurt her children, and perhaps she genuinely loved this other man, and in the end, who knows the truth? Not me, because I never asked, never gave her the chance to explain, refused to listen, until it was too late. I was only a child, but I was stubborn.